offered with comment, a half-hour program with Professors Arthur Wills and Thomas Mutch of the University of Alaska Department of English. Each week at this time, the hosts of Offered with Comment discuss with their guests outstanding literary selections. Now here is Professor Mutch.
Today, Dr. Wills and I have as guests Dr. John Gill and Bob Allen, a student whom I think our audience is already familiar with. We've chosen to discuss today Machiavelli's work, The Prince. Ever since this work was published at the beginning of the 16th century, it has been notorious, I believe, and has been responsible for establishing the term Machiavellianism through such statements, outrageous as they may seem, as these within it. It is necessary for a prince who wishes to maintain himself to learn how not to be good. And a prudent ruler ought not to keep faith when by doing so it would be against his interest. It is necessary to be a great feigner and dissembler, or even more, perhaps cynically, men forget the murder of their fathers sooner than the loss of their patrimony. Rather than try to sum up Machiavelli's position, I think I'd rather begin this discussion by asking, first of all, if any, what the opinion of the members of our panel is on whether they think Machiavelli was serious in what he presented. Did he really intend to set down these principles as those principles which a prince or ruler should follow?
Well, I think contemporary research has established, Tom, that this follows a particular genre in the period. There were many, many such advices to ruling princes. And as a matter of fact, one was published in England in 1558, I believe, called Mirror for Magistrates. And the assumption is that it derives from Machiavelli, and Machiavelli's work itself is somewhat derivative from Boccaccio's De Casibus, The Fall of Princes and How They Could Keep from Falling. So I have a feeling that Machiavelli here was altogether serious, and especially in terms of his attachments to Florence, I believe. He was always disturbed about the political situation there.
Do you think it might be possible, though, that he was using this particular form, the set of rules or the formula for advice to a prince, perhaps for some other purpose?
No, I don't think so. I have a feeling that other than giving advice and perhaps as a way of prying open the door for patronage, that's always an assumption, he was altogether serious.
So do you think a prince then should be this this hard-hearted and cynical in his approach to his subject?
Well, that's a different matter.
Well, now, it seems to me that you're leaving out the whole function of Machiavelli in his life, the fact that the only job of any importance he had was the job under the Republic of Florence, after the Medici family had been deprived of power, and that he lost the job again immediately, that they got the power back, and not only that, but was put to the torture under the suspicion of conspiring against them. So that where the parties were concerned, every action that we know of was taken on the Republican side.
Something that's especially delightful to me in his dedication to Lorenzo the Magnificent, he praises him somewhat extravagantly, and then concludes the dedication with this comment: "From your high eminence, look down on unworthy me, who has been exiled."
he obviously wanted a job, but he may have underestimated the subtlety of the Medici, who could see through a thing like this.
Well, this then would argue that there is no subtlety involved in the prince. That then it is to be taken at face value, more or less. That,
well,
a prince should actually conspire to force his subjects to his rule, and we should take seriously things such as it is better to be hated than to be loved, because this is the more compelling force for obedience.
Yes, and that it's very important for a prince to be known as religious, but that he should not let his religion interfere with his policy. So whenever we elect a president and he immediately joins the church, we know that the tradition is not dead.
Yes, but as he says, John, a prince should seem to be all mercy, faith, integrity, humanity, and religion. He should seem to be
no,
so.
No, it should
now,
be.
Now, that's altogether pain. Different from saying that
it
he should be so.
Should
yes,
be,
but you see, our writer
be,
knows
be,
certain
be.
Facts that these things
testing
are
one,
traditions.
Three,
he's not
four,
revealing anything
one,
to the princes.
Two,
they know
three,
how they
four,
get
one,
but what he's
two,
revealing
three,
is to the public just how crooked these scoundrels are. That,
but how
that
do they get their power?
They get their power by murdering their fathers, by suppressing anybody who stands against them, by getting a name for being religious, but not letting it interfere with their willingness to torture their enemies if they get a good chance.
Well, I think you're being somewhat too severe on Machiavelli. He says in The Prince, for example, that there are two methods of becoming a prince, by ability or good fortune. Now, does ability entail, willingness to annihilate your opponents?
Knowing when to annihilate your opponents and when to buy them. I mean, he's just as cynical as that. And I think if you ability means, in the quotation from him, what he means by it, which is cleverness and unscrupulousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, doesn't the viciousness that seems evident in this book come from the fact that no principality in Italy at the time had autonomous power, that each one was fighting for autonomy, and that everyone was on the step up,
yes,
rather than trying to dictate to
and as a matter of fact, Bob, in the epilogue you have a kind of passionate plea for the unification of Italy, that some prince would appear who would, as a matter of fact, follow these precepts for rule.
Yes, this
and
is.
Then could unify these rather miscellaneous and warring city states. I think that's one of his purposes.
And this, of course, is the basis for the argument that the main value of Machiavelli is as an Italian patriot, that his interest is in nationalism. And yet, is this true entirely throughout the work? Throughout the principles that he's presented.
Well, he's certainly loyal to Florence all the way through, and especially to the Florentine Republic, which he served, and which was reestablished again just before his death.
I think, though, one difficulty in reading Prince, and a good point to bring out, is just this. Although it seems that Machiavelli says to the prince that you must manipulate your subjects by any means possible, do anything that you can to secure their support. Also, he seems to be basing this upon some sort of democratic or at least rationalistic source of power for the prince, for the ruler. In other words, he's showing a great deal of respect for the power of the people under a ruler.
Well, I think rather, Tom, that he bases it upon a particular view of humanity.
Something screwed up in
this
the
hairstand
because it shouldn't. Well, this should record any time you've got this power.
Hello,
are you talking? Testing
1, 2, 3, 4.
Don't stay down by itself.
Humanity as bad.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The individual is capricious, selfish, full of self-interest, and therefore he must be ruled somewhat arbitrarily and ruthlessly. And I object. Well, let me put it this way, Tom. I think his all of these precepts derive from this view of human nature. Wouldn't you say that's true, John?
Well, I think he has his tongue in his cheek all the time, because as a patriot, as a Republican Florence and hoping to restore
when you're talking to this, it should be recording. When you're talking to this, it should be recording. When you're talking to this, it should be recording.
And just by some coincidence,
when you're talking to this, it should be recording.
Just of outline policies of government
this, it should be recording, but we don't know whether it is recording or whether it's not recording.
He's impeaching himself, John. He was also rather influential diplomat at the time.
There's some question of that. I don't think he was very successful as a diplomat, really.
But
he was trying to get a job. He was trying to get a job from the Medici, so he thought he could write it in a subtle enough form so they wouldn't realize that what he said about Cesare Borgia would be immediately applied to the Medici.
On the other hand, when you come to actually considering the problems of a ruler in a state of any size, isn't it true that as far as the ruler is concerned, his subjects have to, for all practical purposes, be considered selfish, willful kind of creatures who cannot readily be depended upon to be
we should be recording now very strongly
to act in the best interest of their sovereign or of the state itself.
I think that's an outmoded Hobbes Leviathan view. I'm not certain that it's altogether credible, Tom.
I'm delighted to find myself in thorough agreement, Art, because it seems to me that this is the error that rulers have made too much of the time, and that fundamentally, if this error becomes prevalent, a free government is impossible.
Well, don't we face it, though, even in our own country, where private and sectional interests through lobbies and such dictate a good deal of our governmental policy?
Well,
and so
this may be true of lobbies, but what about, you're saying it of humanity, you see.
I'm saying not of humanity in any sense where you examine the individual human, but only in the sense of a governor of a state who has to consider his subjects, his people, as a body. It would work perhaps would have worked in Athens. It would work in a small community where there was some possibility of free exchange. But as soon as one comes to a ruler who represents tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, the people has to be considered as an amorphous mass, and out of that will arise this feeling that they are selfish and that their interests are not the same interests as those of the state.
Well, I find more sympathy with Jefferson's statement of the problem, which I think is the one that's written into the American form of government. He says that while he doesn't agree with those people who say that human nature is corrupt and untrustworthy, he thinks that this may not be going too far for the higher orders, that the so-called aristocrats who rise above the swinish multitude and then work out tricks to take the power of choosing away from those who selected them are probably do conform to this description, so that Machiavelli's description of the character of the average prince is probably not too far from the truth.
But I think his description of the individual, of the essence that he posits of the individual,
is altogether
misleading. I don't suppose that subject humanity is blind, avaricious, selfish.
May I try to counter that, Art, with what I consider a good specific example, and this is based on Galbraith's The Affluent Society. Are we not now at the point in our country where obviously the government must tax heavily for those things which the citizens cannot and will not do? They would continue to buy cars with higher horsepower and higher top speeds and not willingly contribute to a highway system that could handle such cars. Therefore, it is the duty of the state to build such a highway system. Whether or not the people can be committed to, at one time on one ballot, perhaps say, yes, we want better highways, it's the duty of the state to do this, because the people are not that well aware of their own better interests, their own long-range interests. Mm-hmm. Therefore, doesn't the political body have to be treated in this way?
No, I don't think so.
In other words, you would put 1963 cars on a 1920 highway system if the citizens did not happen to think that this was important enough to vote on.
Well, I don't see that what we have now is any solution, any great improvement.
You've been driving on Alaska roads too long.
Probably. I would like to ask Bob what he thinks of Machiavelli's choice of the hero, Cesare Borgia. Is he an ideal prince?
Well, do you think that this? First of all, do you think that this is his hero, or only someone to focus on?
No, I don't think so. He charters his career quite graphically, and after summing up all of his accomplishments, he does hedge a bit.
He
makes some slight apology, but he says, if one wishes to rule and sustain his rule, you could not find a better model than Pope Alexander VI's son. And I'm not certain that he's an altogether good model.
Well, didn't he end unhappily anyway? And isn't this part of the impact of the story? He shows how to get power, but he also shows what happens to people who get it that way.
Yes, but then is this any necessary condemnation of the way of getting power?
I don't believe he's a. I don't consider that he's a moralist.
No.
But his interest in free government and his interest in publishing an expose in the only way that an expose could have been published in those days seemed to me the dominating point here. Whether it's an accurate description of human nature or not is another question. And I certainly doubt that, but I doubt if that was intended.
John, you feel this is an oblique way of attacking incompetent and ruthless princes at the time? Is that your stand?
I don't think incompetent is the adjective I'd use for the Renaissance princes, you know, for the greater part. They were extremely competent, but they were extremely unscrupulous, and they created political instability, which in the fell down on them, or specifically fell down on their children. They were never able to set up hereditary kingdoms.
Well, if this is an oblique attack upon them, then you'd have to say that Machiavelli's something of a humane prince himself.
Well, I would say with Rousseau, Rousseau says that Machiavelli is the first Republican.
Do you think perhaps that Machiavelli was simply being an analyst?
Well, an exposé is a very powerful form of writing, and if people later think that if it's put subtly in the form of advice, it still is just as effective as it was before. But it could conceivably get through the Medici censorship and might even get the writer a job.
Well, as a matter of fact, it was supposedly plagiarized a number of years before it was published. Mm-hmm. And
well, it wasn't published immediately. It wasn't published during Machiavelli's life.
No.
It had circulated privately and drew no great attention.
Yeah.
Well, Machiavelli's life was under the Medici during that whole period.
Yeah.
And he died too soon after the fall of the Medici to get any appreciation for what he'd done.
Mm-hmm.
But can't we then look upon this as a very realistic presentation of
what
the prince says he is doing, but of what he actually is faced with as practical measures, how he must carry on the business of ruling
the kind of practical measures that he is faced with and how they look to him and what he is really doing.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that actually is a virtue in the work then is stripping away all the pious moralizing and all the excuses that the prince gives to his people. Do you think it's possible that this work may have been intended only to be esoteric, confined to a very limited audience, and never designed for general reading at all?
Well, as a matter of fact, he says in chapter 15, Tom, here he states specifically his reasons for writing the work. And I quote, "But my intention to write something of use to those who understand it appear to me more proper to go to the real truth of the matter than to its imagination. And many have imagined republics and principalities which has never been seen or known to exist in reality. For how we live is so far removed from how we ought to live that he who abandons what is done for what ought to be done will rather learn to bring about his own ruin than his preservation," unquote. And he's offering advice for people who are in the situation of ruling. These are practical, realistic measures of
yes.
how to sustain power.
Yes, and certainly the subject then should never realize that he
is the subject
being
himself.
Should never realize that he is being ruled in this way. That this is then designed for an esoteric audience, the audience of princes and potential princes.
No, not necessarily an esoteric one, let's say the people in power.
But what happens if this gets diffused among the people at large? What is the impact going to be?
Well, nine-tenths of the people involved in this type of government at the time wouldn't be involved in the government.
Yes, and he also makes a statement somewhere in the book, I think it's fairly late, that there are three types of brains. This is a rather delightful dichotomy. One that originates thought. Another type is that which can read something and understand. And then you have the third type of brain, which cannot originate nor understand what it reads. Now, the first two, he says, are somewhat commendable, but the last is thoroughly odious. And the subjects possess the latter, so they couldn't understand this anyway.
He is himself a subject and not a prince.
No, I believe that he agrees quite thoroughly that this is not, would agree probably, that this is not for the common man, for the common subject, but that there are any number in a position similar to his own, from his having held a responsible position as secretary and such to the Republic, that he can know this, that other people faced with the responsibilities of ruling, mm-hmm. or
well,
part of them.
He says, for example, that the prince must be a lion and a fox, a lion in strength and ruthlessness, and a fox in power of dissimulation and cunning. Are there no other prerequisites that a prince must have? They seem to me to be rather bestial on the whole.
Well,
is man nothing more than can he do nothing more than imitate animal qualities?
Well, in situation. It's nothing more than anarchy. It's a state of civil war. And the Englishman who looked upon Machiavelli looked upon him exactly this way. This was anarchy. This was civil war. We must have a monarchy. And when this was popular in England, was during the reign of Elizabeth,
mm-hmm.
who was the last of the great Tudor
kings. Yes. But Bob, look at the advice he gives to the ruling prince. He says that he must study day and night war and its organization and discipline. It seems to me, it would appear to me to be a rather poor prince who studied only these things. Wouldn't you agree,
John? Well, I think this was probably because Machiavelli had written a book on the organization and discipline of war, and he just wanted the princes to buy it.
I think the most difficult gap to get across, though, for anyone in reading the work is simply that there is no reference here anywhere to any sort of ideals, to any ethics or anything else.
Well, there are pragmatic ethics, Tom.
Well, yes, if this succeeds in furthering the power of the prince, it is good.
Mm-hmm. I like the discussion that he enters into near the end of the book, which deals with the problem of fortune and free will. and he himself is somewhat divided about it. Now, do princes fall because of adverse fortune or because of their own decision? And he comes to the conclusion that it is a collusion. But one can learn to overcome fortune. For example, he says, well, suppose you have a flood. It wipes out your fertile valleys. It annihilates homes. That could be construed as bad fortune. But as a creature of free will, you can come to anticipate that in the future you can build a dike against it. So what he does is to pitch free will, the power of free will, thoroughly in the area of anticipation. One can anticipate events that might be somewhat destructive to one's role. And I think if you read the other manifestos in the day which treat this same problem, I think that Machiavelli is working in the direction of something which was quite crucial to the Elizabethan tragedians, that man must be responsible for his own actions, that he is not necessarily a victim of a mere external, capricious, but necessary authority.
Well, and this is a practical, a kind of a, I believe like, that Max Lerner referred to it as a grammar of power, and that it is based entirely on practical concerns, practical matters. In fact, I think probably Lerner summed it up best in this kind of statement of the attitude. Ideals and ethics are important in politics as norms, but they are scarcely effective as techniques. It is Machiavelli's business to deal with the techniques.
Well, I think John and I would say if this is a grammar of power, there are a lot of ain'ts in it.
You've been listening to Offered with Comment. Offered with Comment is produced and moderated by Professors Arthur Wills and Thomas Smutch. Today's guests were Dr. John Gill and Bob Allen. The subject of next week's program will be Darkness at Noon by Arthur Koestler. Offered with Comment was directed by Don Wheeler and originated in the studios of KUAC on the campus at College. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.